Luke 21, verses 10 through 17. Then he continued by saying to them, "Nation will rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom. And there will be great earthquakes, and in various places plagues and famines. And there will be terrors and great signs from heaven. But before all things, they will lay their hands on you, and will persecute you, delivering you to synagogues and prisons, bringing you before kings and governors for my name's sake. It will lead to an opportunity for you for your testimony. So make up your minds not to prepare beforehand to defend yourself, for I will give you utterance and wisdom, which none of your opponents will be able to rescue, resist, or refute. But you will be betrayed even by parents and brothers and relatives and friends, and they will put some of you to death. You will be hated by all because of my name."
Well, good morning. Good to see everyone is out this morning. Those of you that are visiting, we certainly welcome you to the church that meets here at East Orange, and we invite you to come back at every opportunity you can. One brief announcement that I'll make. Percy asked me to make sure that you continue to remember Philip Angoy, of course, who is out of the country, and we continue to remember his family, him and his family in our prayers, after losing his little granddaughter. So please remember them and that he will have, of course, a safe passage back to be with us again. Well, it's been a couple of weeks of special preaching, and now it's me again. But hopefully the lesson this morning you'll find it interesting. Was asked a few weeks back if I would, in fact, before the whole situation back at the end of May, and we'll make mention of that in a moment, I was asked if I would take a look at Luke chapter 21, and as my Bible and many Bibles say, the heading of the paragraph that begins in verse 5 is Signs of the End. And it parallels a passage in Matthew 24, you can see that I've quoted it up here, where the disciples asked Jesus what would be the sign of his coming, and in some translations at least, the end of the world. Many say the end of the age, but some say the end of the world. Are there signs of the end of the world? Is there something that you can look around and see in the world that you can tell that the world is about to end? I suppose that people have speculated on that question, perhaps for thousands of years, even before Jesus maybe. But continue to speculate, even today, whether a person is a believer or not. We hear people speculating on the end of the world, the end of time, what will bring the end of the world, what will signal it, what signs there might be or might not be. And it's a topic of discussion that I suppose will go on much past the time we're alive. So are there signs of the end? Let's take a look at that question. You'll remember, and I'm sure because a number of you have talked about this. In fact, I've had conversations with you. In fact, during the meeting, a lot of us back in the foyer or outside on the steps, this was the topic of conversation that we ended up having. This whole thing with Harold Camping. And that's a name you probably are familiar with, who is the president of the Family Radio Christian Network, who, in asking for donations and so forth, and that created a lot of controversy, he claimed that the rapture and judgment day would come, notice, beyond a shadow of a doubt, he said. It was to come on May 21st of this past month, of course. It was supposed to come at 6 p.m. local time and sweep the globe time zone by time zone. The end of the world was and is supposed to follow on October 21st of this very year. Campion claimed to use the Bible as his source to make this prediction. Some of Camping's followers even estimated the number of people who would be raptured at about 200 million, or roughly 3% of the world's population. And of course, right before our gospel meeting started, May 21st uneventfully came and went. On Sunday, May 22nd, I said right before, during our gospel meeting, right? The day came and went. But on Sunday of our gospel meeting, Camping, after having missed the prediction, was secluded in his house, reporters gathering, of course, amassing around him. And he finally came out and issued a very brief statement. part of it which said this: give me a day, no interviews, I've got to live with it, I've got to think it out. Well, the next day on Monday, he came out and said May 21st had been a spiritual day of judgment, and the physical rapture is still going to take place, but now it's going to come on October 21st, and as he said, simultaneously with the destruction of the universe by God. I suppose when October 21st comes and goes, that may be the end of Mr. Camping and his predictions, but maybe not. Now, coinciding with that, if you've been watching the news and keeping up, even before Camping kind of came on the scene, and everybody started hearing of him and listening, you know, to the prediction he'd made and so forth, you may be aware of something called the Mayan, as in the Maya civilization, the Mayan long count calendar. You may be familiar with a movie that came out within the last couple of years that really was kind of a takeoff on this whole idea. But the Mayan long count calendar is supposed to end with those that look at it say it ends with the winter solstice on December 21st, 2012. Now that's interesting because the Mayan civilization has long since passed into extinction, so to speak, even though there are a number of descendants down in Mesoamerica. But nonetheless, this calendar is supposed to end next December 21st. The date marks the end of a 5,125-year cycle, and because of that, there have been a wide range of eschatological or end of time and, you know, all kinds of cataclysmic events that are supposed to take place. People predicting it since this long, long, long calendar, 5,000-year calendar, ends on that date. To support all of that, there have been a number of astrological alignments and various numerological formulae, or just formulas based on numbers, that have been set forth to support that supposition. There are different interpretations of it. If you listen to the New Age or those who are of the New Age movement, a lot of them will talk about the fact that the earth is just going to kind of transform. It's not going to end, but that people are going to sort of go through either a physical, some of them would say, but most of them talk about a spiritual transformation, as though we'll enter a new age of enlightenment or whatever it might be. And so they're really marking that as a transitional date. Others are suggesting that the winter solstice of 2012 is going to mark the end of the world through natural catastrophe. And that's what this movie was about, those of you that might be familiar with it. And there are all kinds of scenarios that are posed. One lesser-known movie, and maybe it was just a television movie or whatever, I'm not sure, but really was based on the whole idea of the solar maximum, the idea of the magnetic field distortion and all of that, and how it might affect the Earth. And the Earth and its particular revolution and so forth. Or some predict that there's going to be a collision with some black hole or planet or whatever it might be. Now, when you look at all of that, I mean, there are all these different scenarios for a great change in the Earth, or even, as many are saying, the end of the world. Of course, if you listen to those who are supposed to know, scholars will tell you that, you know, all of these cataclysmic events are not found in the documents. If you look at the Mayan documents, nothing like that. It just simply ends. It just simply is a cycle that ends, which may very well mean that it is only a document of that particular cycle. There might even have been others that have never been found. In fact, I was doing some research on this the other day, and supposedly they estimate about 1% of all the Mayan documents and so forth that are probably out there in the jungles has actually been looked at. So there may be other documents of other cycles, etc. But this idea of the long count calendar ending and that being the signaling the end of the world and all of that is a total misrepresentation even of Mayan history, they will say. And astronomers come back with all of this, you know, this idea of the solar maximum affecting the Earth. I mean, the sun goes through this cycle, what is it, about every 12 years, something like that. There's nothing phenomenal about that, really, or whatever. It's all pseudoscience that it's going to somehow cause the end of the Earth. And so they say simple observation will tell you there's no passing planet. You would be able to see one now. If there were a planet that was going to collide with the Earth, you would be able to be tracking it right now. There's nothing like that coming. So it's all false. And yet, people are starting to talk about 2012 now. And especially with camping's prediction coming, having come and gone. Now, go with me, if you will, to Luke 21. Let's say let's forget all of that for a moment. And we say, okay, but does the Bible predict the end? I mean, certainly the passage that Kevin read a moment ago seems to describe the condition of the world. When one begins to look at passages like Matthew 24 or Mark 13 or Luke 21, or passages like that, maybe sometimes people read in the book of Revelation and they say, you know, that sounds just like what's going on in the world today. In fact, eerily so. And I'll put up a list of signs in just a moment. We'll talk about them very briefly. But ask yourself, doesn't that really seem to be describing what's going on in the world? Well, when you look at this paragraph, there are two things that you have to bear in mind. And I asked this as a question this morning in the bulletin. What two things do you always have to keep in mind when you're looking at such a passage? And those two things are this. Remember when we studied all of the hermeneutics and everything a couple of years ago? That was for a reason. Because you never want to go to a passage like Luke 21 and study it, number one, out of context. The context is important. What Jesus says doesn't begin, for example, down in verse 8 where these signs are listed. You know, they're going to be false Christ, etc. It doesn't begin there. It has a context. There's a reason for his saying it. Whenever you go to a passage like this, you want to ask yourself the question, why did he say this? What are these signs for? What is it about? I want you to just hold your finger there. We'll come right back to it. But go to Revelation chapter 1 with me for a moment. You know, a lot of people talk about the book of Revelation. A lot of people, you know, get really disturbed about the book of Revelation. Speaking of movies, all kinds of movies have been made from the book of Revelation. Whether it be the Omen, whatever you call it. I think there were four of them. Some crazy movie that Demi Moore was in, and I don't know what that thing was. But all kinds of movies that are based on the signs from Revelation and signs that are supposed to signal the end of the world and all of that kind of thing. And things that are supposed to tell you the rapture is coming or tribulation is coming and all of that. And yet what it seems to never be noted in any of these movies or teachings or whatever it might be is Revelation chapter 1 and the very reason these signs are given. Notice Revelation 1 and verse 1. The revelation of Jesus Christ that God gave unto him to show unto his servants things which must, and notice the phrase, shortly come to pass. We're not talking about signs of our day. We're not talking about events that are going to happen in 2011 or 12 or whenever. We're talking about things that were shortly coming to pass 2,000 years ago. We're talking about events that were going on in John's day. In fact, look, if you will, down at verse 3. Blessed is he that reads, and they that hear the words of this prophecy, and keep those things which are written therein. Notice the last phrase of verse 3. For the time is at hand. I've asked a lot of people over the years, I said, if you want to understand Revelation, start by emphasizing in your mind verses 1 and 3 and one other verse from chapter 1 we're going to look at, that these things were to shortly come to pass. The time was near to when John wrote. In fact, if you look down at verse 9, when we talk about the tribulation, you know, that 7 years of horrible events on the earth that people seem to be worried about from Revelation, well, John tells you it's not going to be in our day, 2011 or whenever. But look at verse 9. I, John, who am also your brother and your companion in tribulation and in the kingdom of Jesus Christ. We're not talking about something that was for the future. Revelation is talking about something that was for the present, their present, then, 2,000 years ago. So my point of this is, it has to be taken in context. When you study the signs of Revelation, all those earthquakes and famines and destruction and war and blood and all of that that's going on in Revelation, Chapter 1, verses 1, 3, and 9 show you when that was happening, when it was taking place. Not now, but then. The second thing to do that you have to do with all of these passages is you have to harmonize them with everything else the Bible says. In other words, when I look at Luke 21, I've got to harmonize that with everything else the Bible says about this subject matter. And so I want to look at all other passages. One of the things I certainly want to do is go to Matthew 24 and Mark 13. If Luke is an account, and that's the way we say it, if it's an account of what Jesus was saying at this particular time, and we'd go back and set the context, we'd find that Jesus was in the temple. In fact, you can see this if you look at the first few verses of Luke 21. It's the not often read Luke's account of the widow and the two mites. Now, we always go to Mark 12 and read that account. And if you read it in Mark 12, you go immediately from that to chapter 13 and these signs. Well, Luke 21 does the same thing. It talks about the widow and casting in her two mites. And then immediately, it talks about the fact, if you look at verse 5, that some were talking about the temple. And they were talking about how great and grand it was. Remember John 2 and how the Jews chided Jesus and said, man, the temple's they've been working on this thing for 46 years to remodel it. In fact, we're told that they worked on the temple about 100 years remodeling it before it was destroyed. They never even finished it, according to history. But they told Jesus, 46 years and you're going to destroy it in 3 days. They didn't understand what he was talking about in John 2. My point is this. It was a great, grand building. And so some people were talking about it. And they were talking about how fine it was and all of that. And Jesus made the prediction, verse 6. And for these things which you behold, the days will come in the which there shall not be left one stone upon another, and that shall not be thrown down. And that was Jesus' prophecy about the temple. And verse 7 was the question that they asked. In fact, if we put Matthew and Mark's account together, what happened was that four of the disciples pulled Jesus aside or followed Jesus somewhere, whatever, but in private, they asked him, tell us when. Not just that it's going to happen, but tell us when. Give us some idea. Give us some signs so that we'll know when it's going to come. And that's why then Jesus goes on to begin listing these signs. Now that's the context. So what is it talking about? Well, it's talking about the destruction of the temple. We'll point that out in just a second. But you notice then that it is very similar. When you look at these signs, it's very similar to passages in the Old Testament and very similar to the book of Revelation. And there are some common themes. Like Luke doesn't say it, but if you went to Matthew's account, you'd start talking about the moon turning to blood, the sun being darkened, and people get all upset about that. Some great cataclysmic event is going to happen. Maybe 2012, we're going to collide with a passing planet, and that's going to signal the end of the world. That's not what Jesus is talking about. Jesus is using language very similar to Old Testament passages, not literally the moon being turned to blood, but a passage that's descriptive of a great change, and a change that affects everybody, and a change that everyone can see as though the moon were turned to blood and the sun were darkened. And you can easily see that from Old Testament passage. In other words, it's descriptive language borrowed from the Old Testament prophecies. Prophecies that you can know easily what they're about. Revelation does the same thing. Now let's stay here with these signs, though, in Luke 21. Notice the kinds of signs you get. And let's just think about them, and we'll think about them in two ways. False Christ and false prophets. In other words, messiahs that come and say, follow me. I'm the Christ. I'm the one appointed by God. I'm the one sent by God. I'm the anointed one. Follow me. Or false prophets, like Harold Camping. Listen to my message. I'm the one who knows. I've figured it out. I've got a new message for the world. Doesn't that sound very much like our time? False Christ, false prophets. To borrow the phrase from Matthew that everybody seems to quote, wars and rumors of wars. You'll notice Jesus says something very similar here in verse 10 of Luke 21. Nation will rise against nation, kingdom against kingdom. There'll be wars and rumors of wars and so forth. Doesn't that sound very much like what's going on? A lot of wars going on in our world today. A lot of rumors of possible wars. What's going to happen in the Middle East? What's going to happen with Syria and Egypt? And what's going to happen with Iran, or Iran, rather? They're building up a nuclear armament. Are they going to do something? And does the Bible talk about that? Is that what Revelation is saying? Is that what Jesus was talking about? All of that kind of thing. Great earthquakes. Man, have we had some earthquakes. I mean, not just here, but Japan. You can turn on the television every single week and they'll tell you about the possibility of a great earthquake, believe it or not, in the central United States that may once again change the course of the Mississippi River. Or the earthquake that's been predicted and possibly coming for 100 years out in California, the San Andreas Fault and so forth. And all kinds of disaster movies are made about it. What about famines? How long has there been a cut-wrenching famine going on in countries in Africa or South America, etc.? Pestilences, diseases. Seems like every time we turn around, somebody is talking about a possible, not epidemic, but pandemic. A new disease that's going to sweep the earth. Is it SARS? Is it the avian flu? Is it this? Is it that? And it's almost as though they're telling you that we're just destined. I mean, it has to happen. That we're living on borrowed time as far as that goes, because there hasn't really been a pandemic for several hundred years, unless you want to count the Spanish influenza of 1918. And we're just kind of on borrowed time about it. Great signs from heaven. There seems to be more talk now than I can ever remember in my lifetime, and most probably all of you can remember, about destruction from a comet, destruction from a black hole, destruction from a planet, destruction from this, from that. It's almost as though we're living our lives with one eye cocked toward the skies to see what's coming next. I mean, doesn't that sound like our time? Jesus said, they'll persecute you, even to death. Seems like more and more we read about, Christians being killed in this country or killed in that country or even in our own country. We see the persecution. We turn on television shows and Christians are being laughed at. Like Wes was saying a moment ago, people ridiculing for the things we do. Not respecting us for the lives we live or what we do, but ridiculing us, mocking us. A person might ask a question, even in our own country. When does that go the next step to what Jesus is talking about? When it's persecution here, even physical persecution here. Doesn't it sound like our world? Jerusalem being surrounded by enemies. No question a person would take a look at the Middle East and see all of these Muslim countries and all of these radical leaders in some of these countries and say, Jerusalem, our ally, etc., is surrounded by enemies. And perhaps the only real buffer there is us and our backing of Israel. Jerusalem surrounded by enemies. Men's hearts filled with fear. Seems like people live in fear in this day and time. Most people that you meet, most people you talk to, they're trying to forget it. And some people are living, and maybe we would say, well, that's not really true because people are kind of living like they just don't care. That may be so, but dig down deep. Get in a conversation with people, and you'll find that there's a lot of fear with people. Fear of the unknown, fear of what it's all about, why we're here, what's the purpose? Is there any purpose to any of this? People are afraid. And they're afraid of a lot of things, and they're filled with fear about it. I mean, so much, we live in a time when so much of your life depends on what other people do. I mean, what the government does and what the economy does and all of that kind of thing. It's not as simple as it once was that you can pretty much guarantee you are going to eat and live and have your basic necessities filled if you're willing to get up in the morning and go to work, plow the field or whatever it might be. No, you have to be dependent on what other people do, and that's scary. It's very scary. When will whatever happen to take away your whole way of life? People are filled with fear when you really talk to people. And then you look at some of the things Matthew said. The love of many will wax cold. Does this seem to you like in the world today, nobody really loves anybody else? Children don't love their parents. Parents don't love their children. Friends don't really love friends. Brothers and sisters don't love each other. Not even Christians really love each other. Does it really seem like that? I think a lot of people say, yeah, it does. Jesus had it pegged. The gospel will be preached in all the world. I remember hearing back in the 70s, especially as a little boy, I used to watch a lot of these televangelists, and I used to listen to them talk about, you know, they were raising money to put on a broadcast in this South American country or that, you know, Asian country or whatever it might be. And they would tell you, once the gospel is preached in all the world, Jesus said the end will come. I remember the church I grew up in, the denominational church that I grew up in, they used to quote that quite a bit. And they used to say, the end is close because the gospel is now being preached in all the world. Now, when you look at all of those signs, I mean, you go back and look at it and you begin to consider these signs. Let's see if we can get back to this list. And you look at all these signs that Jesus talked about, and a person would say, that's very descriptive of our world. So is Jesus talking about the end of the world? Well, what's the answer to it? We have to understand these signs were given by Jesus to announce destruction, but specifically to announce the destruction of the temple. Look at verse 5. Some spake of the temple, how it was adorned with goodly stones and gifts. And he said, as for these things which you behold, the days will come in the which there shall not be left one stone upon another that shall not be thrown down. And they ask him, Master, but when shall these things be? And what sign will there be of when these things will come to pass? And he said. Jesus spoke these signs to tell of the destruction of the temple. And if we read Matthew and Mark's account with it, and really if we look at the end of this passage in Luke chapter 21, he's talking about the greater destruction of the city of Jerusalem. Go down to verses 20 and following, and you can see that. When you see Jerusalem compassed with enemies, know that the desolation thereof is near. Now, how do you know, though, even if Jesus was talking about that? A person might say, well, okay, but there's still a Jerusalem, and there's still a temple. And if I look over in Israel and I say there's still a temple and there's still a city of Jerusalem, then that must mean that these signs have not come to pass. Well, there's two things to consider. One is historical. In other words, we would look back in history and we would ask ourselves a question, was there ever a time when literally the temple was destroyed, so much so, verse 6, that not one stone was left upon another? I mean, was Jesus speaking of the destruction of the temple? No question. So was there ever a time in history when exactly what Jesus said came to pass? Answer is yes. Around AD 70, the Roman army marched into Jerusalem and they destroyed the temple, and literally to get the gold that was inlaid in the walls of the temple, they ripped it apart stone by stone. It came to pass in the first century. Did the Roman army ever encompass Jerusalem? Was there ever a time, as Matthew, Mark, and Luke are describing, that the people literally had to flee for their lives, that a mass of them were killed, that Jerusalem was taken, that Israel was conquered then as a nation and depleted, desolate of its people? The answer is yes, AD 70. So when we look back in history, we ask the question, did what Jesus say come to pass? The answer is yes, in AD 70. Well, a person might say, okay, well, did all of these signs take place? Yeah, every one of them. Absolutely every one of them. You can read through the list and you can find that there were false Christs and false prophets. You can find there were earthquakes and famines. Even the Bible will show you some of them. As far as famines are concerned, the whole point, I mean, when we talk about the collection, many times we cite passages where examples were left to us, where money was collected. Why? Because there was a great famine. In fact, there were a number of them. Especially in and around Israel, was there a famine? The poor saints in Jerusalem. Remember that phrase in Romans 15, etc. These signs can be documented to have taken place historically in the first century. especially during the reign of Claudius Caesar. We can see that in Acts 11, some of these things being fulfilled. So the point is, in context, Jesus was talking about a particular thing that happened, that came to pass. He was speaking of the destruction of the temple and of the city of Jerusalem, and it happened. It foretold first century events, and all of them have been fulfilled. But there's something else here, too. Let's notice a phrase. Look down in verse 32. If you look at verse 32, you'll see something Jesus said here. He finishes this whole thing, all of these signs, and notice what he says. Verily I say unto you, this generation shall not pass away till all be fulfilled. If Jesus were here today, and he were telling you about something that's going to happen, let's say that he were talking about the destruction of America, and he were talking about some great building that we might point to. It doesn't matter, you know, pick one. The White House or the Pentagon or whatever. If Jesus made that prediction and then Jesus finished after telling us it's going to happen and after telling us the signs that were going to show that it was going to happen and then Jesus finished by saying, I warn you, this is coming in your generation. What would you think he was saying? That he meant 2,000 years from now? Or he meant that you may very well be alive because it's coming that soon? You know what he said. And in fact, it's very explicit. You see, in Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they all are very explicit to quote Jesus that these things are coming specifically in that generation. AD 70 is when it happened. So Jesus was basically predicting something that was going to come in about 40 years from the time he spoke. And 40 years would certainly be that generation. You have to understand that the final return of Jesus. Let's go to Matthew chapter 24 for a moment. There's a lot of debate about whether or not the disciples asked him, when they were asking for the prediction of the signs of, you know, the temple being destroyed and so forth, did they go ahead and ask him the question of the ages? Now, here's what I mean by that. We know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that Jesus was speaking of the destruction of the temple. And we know beyond a shadow of a doubt the disciples were saying, tell us when it's going to happen. But if you look at Matthew's account and read verse 3 very carefully with me. He sat upon the Mount of Olives and the disciples came unto him privately. And Mark tells you the ones that did. But tell us when these things shall be. Some would say that's question number 1. When's it going to happen? Question number 2 is, what's going to be the sign of your coming? That's question number 2. And some would say question number 3 is, and of the end of the world. It's almost like this. If we can get him to answer, you know, when the temple's going to be destroyed, maybe we can slip this big question of, when's the world going to end in there? I'm not sure of that. I'm not convinced they were asking that question, but I'm not convinced they weren't asking the question. They may very well have been. But regardless, okay, and I want you to hear this part. Regardless of whether the disciples are asking, tell us when the end of the world is going to be or not. When Jesus finishes all of these predictions, all of these signs that are coming on, you know, the destruction of the temple, the destruction of Jerusalem, and so forth, Jesus very clearly tells you something about the end of the world. Are there signs about Jesus' return? Can camping look in the Bible and find some, what was it, Edward? Half shekel deal, and tell you when the world is going to end? No. No one can. Michael White certainly can't. Harold Camping can't. You can't. No one knows. Not even an angel in heaven knows. In fact, Jesus said it like this. If you look at Matthew chapter 24, he tells you very clearly in verse 36, of that day and hour. He may be answering their question, we don't know, but of that day and hour knoweth no man, no, not the angels of heaven, but my Father only. In fact, Mark 13 quotes Jesus as saying, neither the Son knows. In other words, Jesus doesn't know. Only the Father knows when the end of the world is coming. There are no signs, and there are no prophets, and there is no one out there who can predict when Jesus is going to return. The final return of Jesus is known only by the Father. It will come announced, Look at 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. You'll know when it's happening. You won't have to wonder. You won't have to look up into heaven. When I was a little boy, I don't know what happened, if a weather balloon was launched or what. I still to this day don't know what it was. But I was a little bitty boy, and my grandmother took me out on the back porch and pointed up to heaven, and for all the world, it looked like the moon was turning to blood. I mean, there was a big red dot up in the sky. And she got scared. And she thought it was the end of the world. Well, it won't be something you have to guess or wonder about. In other words, it won't be that you'll see, maybe a planet will someday in your lifetime pass close to the earth. And if it does, and I mean not close enough to cause destruction, but close in astronomical terms. In other words, thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away. But it may pass so close that it fills up the sky in brilliance. That it's a gigantic looking ball of light going across the sky. And it may be there for several days. But you won't have to wonder if it's the end of the world. You'll know when the end of the world is coming. Because someday, at some time, if you're alive when it happens, verse 16 of 1 Thessalonians 4 tells you that Jesus will descend from heaven with a shout. And that shout will come from the voice of the archangel. And it's a shout loud enough that everyone in the world will hear it at the same time. And there's a trumpet that will be blown. I don't know who blows it. I don't know if it's a literal trumpet, but it'll sound like a trumpet or whatever. And the trumpet of God will blow, and you will know it's announcing Jesus' return. But it'll come as a thief in the night. It's not something that is going to come, those signs, if you want to call them that, or that announcement, is not going to be something that's way ahead of time, a shout this year and it happens next year. A blow of a trumpet and you know, boy, we better get ready because at some point in the near future, Jesus is coming. Jesus is coming, chapter 5, look at it, as a thief in the night. A thief doesn't come so that you know he's coming. A thief is something that surprises you. A thief is something that you have no idea it's going to happen at the moment. But it's coming. Now, you know generally it's going to happen, don't you? I mean, you buy insurance to protect yourself against thieves. And you know at some point in your life, and I dare say if we went around the room, most everybody in here has had something stolen from them at some time in their life, but you didn't know when it was coming. You knew it was coming, but you just didn't know when. Jesus is coming back the same way. You know He's coming. You just don't know when. The final return of Jesus can come at any moment. We're warned by God to be ready, for we never know when Jesus will come, and all things as we know them right now will end. We'll hear the archangel shout, and we'll hear the trumpet blow, and we'll know it's happening and what it is. We won't have to guess about it. But then it's too late, and Jesus is here. The question for us this morning is, are you ready for Jesus to come? If today is the day, I don't know if it is or it isn't. I don't know if we'll have the business meeting this afternoon, if I'll preach about Job tonight at 6 o'clock. I don't know if tomorrow you'll go to your jobs or whatever it is you do on a Monday. None of us know that. The question is, are you ready if today is the day? If you're here today and you're not a Christian, don't let it be too late. Confess your belief in Jesus, that He is the Son of God. Be willing to repent to change your life and live your life for Christ. Be baptized for forgiveness of your sins. And if you're here today and you're a member of the church, a child of God, you've been baptized, and you're not living the way you need to live, then change that today. Correct that and begin living a faithful life to the Lord. Be ready when Jesus comes again. Won't you please come while we stand and sing?